This is Community Voices on 91.9 UIS. I'm co-host Randy Eccles. Today, something intriguing coming up in the area. In the theater realm, we have Kevin Purcell to talk to us about a production that he has put together. Welcome to Community Voices, Kevin. What do you have cooking for us?
The brief backstory of Lincoln and Shakespeare is in 2011, I had just finished doing Romeo and Juliet out at New Salem. Justin Blandford, now of Illinois Department of Natural Resources and very connected to a lot of the history comes alive stuff many of us are aware of around the Springfield area throughout the year. Justin approached me and said, Kevin, I need you to do a play about Lincoln and Shakespeare. My response to Justin was, why would I do that? Other than the fact that you're asking me to, I'm not sure what the connection is, Justin. Because prior to that moment, I had known a fair bit about Lincoln throughout my life, having grown up in Illinois. Having been an actor and involved in the theater for 40 years, I'd done quite a bit of Shakespeare and knew about him. But I really knew nothing about the connection they had to each other or the fact that you even mentioned them in the same sentence. Justin quickly educated me and handed me a whole stack of books and articles and all kinds of stuff that had printed out and he got from the presidential library in town. He said, here's a start. He said, Lincoln loved Shakespeare. Now go figure it out and make a play out of it. He wanted results very quickly. So I said, well, I need to research this, Justin. So I spent literally about a year reading everything I could find about Lincoln and Shakespeare and his love of the bard and growing up having two books available to him, the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare, and his mother's love of the literature of both of those sources, have just been fascinated over the years. What that resulted in was about a year later, I had sort of a, I describe as a slipshod production of eight actors, including Fritz Klein, that many people know as a Lincoln impersonator in town. We did a number of performances at the old state capitol of this thing I called Lincoln and Shakespeare. Well, there's very little resemblance to what I am doing next weekend at the Hoagland, the 21st and 22nd of February, because over the many opportunities I had to get interaction with the audience and with Justin and with other historians, I realized that the real gem there is very laser focus on Lincoln and his love of the bard and what we can learn about him, his words, his speeches, his writings, his deeds as our greatest president, and how that applies to how we would look both at Lincoln and Shakespeare today, but I think especially at Lincoln. The production people will see next weekend is essentially a one-man show. There are a couple of other actors in it, and one actor plays Edwin Booth, the great Shakespearean thespian from the 19th century, of course, who also happened to be John Wilkes' brother. Another actor plays a character named Charlotte Cushman that too many people don't know about because she was a brilliant Shakespearean actor of the mid-19th century, colleagues with Edwin Booth. And according to all the records I read, when Charlotte Cushman came to town, bigger crowds would gather for her performances of Shakespeare than even for Edwin Booth, a significant theater figure that is far too unknown, in my opinion. And they both have small roles in my production, but this is largely a solo show of Abraham Lincoln and his love of Shakespeare and what we might interpret for ourselves about the synthesis between Lincoln's thinking and writing and the work of Shakespeare that he loved.
That's quite the evolution. I'm glad to hear that was something that worked out for you after the initial production, that you're able to hone in on some key aspects that you think made it even more resonant. Can you go a little more detail? You said that it was really about Lincoln, but was there anything in particular you saw, or what type of reaction did you see that gave you that sense that it needed to be modified a little?
Audience reactions, for one, because we would always do post-play discussions. Justin Blandford's History Comes Alive program in Springfield, anyone that's attended it sees the importance. And of course, a lot of that that has been done is done for tourist audiences in the warmer weather. I saw many, many locals that have attended those kind of programs over the years. A lot of feedback, a lot of reaction, a lot of stuff we learned in the conversation and discussions following the play, having done it at the old state capitol. but it was also evolved through who played Lincoln. I was lucky enough to have Fritz Klein, the original Lincoln, in this play. When we finished a run with Fritz, he said, "Kevin, thank you so much for inviting me to do this, and I would love to put it in my touring package, but it's just too hard. I don't have the brain space for all of Lincoln's stuff as well as Shakespeare stuff, and also being able to be ready to do this speech or that speech on a moment's notice that a particular audience might want from me." I sadly bid Fritz farewell and let him go, as it were. And now I have an actor that has entered this role with the opposite experience. His name is Kim Curley. He lives in the Carbondale area, as do I. Kim has lots and lots of Shakespeare experience as an actor over the years in touring companies in St. Louis. And he's born and raised in Illinois. He knew about Lincoln and a fair bit of knowledge about Lincoln. Way more experience and knowledge with Shakespeare. Fortunately, Kim is the right physical type and is willing to change the way his hair and face look for this production. Going from one Lincoln to another, and when you see Fritz in Lincoln makeup, it's a gobsmacking experience. It's like Lincoln has come back from the dead. I will tell you right now, Kim does not look as much like Lincoln as Fritz does, nor do I think anybody does. But Kim has really rendered himself quite a capable Lincoln. And it's fundamental to this play that you believe this is Lincoln. I'll give you the context of the play. The play takes place in 1865. A few days after the end of the Civil War, and just a few days before Lincoln is assassinated. It's right in that spot where Lincoln is decompressing a bit from the Civil War experience, and they're trying to all reparation stuff and tying up loose ends, reconfiguring the country as one. He often went to theater. In fact, we know for a fact that he went to many Shakespeare productions, not just in Washington, D.C., but also in Springfield at Representative Hall, which is where the majority of touring plays took place between 1842 and about 1875. The conceit is this is just a few days after the war is over. A touring production of Macbeth has come through Springfield. Both Edwin Booth and Charlotte Cushman star in it as the two leads. There is a traveling musical trio. These actors at this level often had musicians travel with them. And that musical trio is on stage in the theater. They are played by Wild Columbine, for people that may know them, Bill Fury's group. As the play opens, Charlotte Cushman comes on stage in costume as Lady Macbeth and welcomes everyone, and then says that we understand the president may be arriving, and at that moment he arrives at the theater. He comes in, is welcomed, and she welcomes the audience to stand, and the Marine Band plays Hail to the Chief, etc., and Lincoln comes and sits in the front row of the audience, holding his complete works of Shakespeare with him. As that is happening, the stage manager comes running from backstage and brings Miss Cushman a note from backstage that she is reading just as Lincoln has entered. She is gobsmacked to learn that her partner, Edwin Booth, backstage is ill and cannot go on. She, as a good actor would do, is improvising at this moment, trying to figure out what to do. One idea she comes up with live in front of the audience is to ask Lincoln if he would be willing to share some of his love of Shakespeare. It just so happens, Cushman knows this because she's had very collegial relationship with Lincoln over his attendance in plays, that Macbeth is his favorite play. In the midst of this, she invites him, and he initially thanks her, but balks, says, "I don't want to take up your audience time." And she gooses the audience and kind of gets them to clap for, you know, the idea, "Come on, Mr. Lincoln, please." He does stand up and speak initially about his love of Shakespeare, right directly to the audience while he's still in the audience. Then the question becomes, for those of you listening right now, where do we go from there? And what happens? What I am very willing to tell the audience is there's a bunch of plays and speeches that we know. We don't know an enormous amount that has actually historical tracing and, you know, tracking from dialogues and Lincoln's writing and what people say about him. But we know a few things. We know that Macbeth was his favorite play. We know that his favorite monologue was from Hamlet, the character of King Claudius. "Oh, my offense is rank," which is all about Claudius's knowing that he has murdered in order to achieve the throne, and he's now married to Hamlet's mother, who is the queen, it's pretty difficult for him to figure out how to pray for forgiveness to heaven amidst all of that stuff. That enormous conflict that he experiences in the play is something that's extremely compelling to Lincoln. Exactly why is that true? Well, you'll have to come and see and find out why it's true. There are other plays that Lincoln loves as well, although Macbeth really is the number one play for him. I invite people to, those of you that know Macbeth, use your imagination. Why would it be that that is by far Lincoln's favorite play? He also loves the opening monologue to Richard III. Now is the winter of our discontent. Probably the most purely evil character in Shakespeare, who comes out and tells you that he is evil, why he is evil, and how he wants the throne. He is the main character, of course, in that play. Lincoln loves performing that monologue. In fact, we have many, many examples through historical documentation of Lincoln spontaneously performing this monologue for his cabinet and for different people that he in politics that he works with. Unbeknownst to them, here he launches into Richard III. We explore all of that, and the play itself is historical fiction. My imagination merging with things that we know that are reasonably factual about Lincoln and his love of Shakespeare. And then where did those things land in his life? And how did might they have driven things he wrote and said? All of that stuff is explored throughout the scenes of the play.
Did you write it in iambic pentameter?
I was curious because I have done a lot of what I would call stage adaptations in my life. For example, most people know the movie The Princess Bride. That was a novel before it was a movie. William Goldman, the author, is the one that created the screenplay for the movie. Prior to the movie, and I didn't even know it was going to be a movie, I did a stage adaptation of that novel. I had to send it to William Goldman for his approval, which I was happy to do. He approved me doing a stage production of it. And the initial stage production was back in the 1970s at SIU, where I happened to be a student. 8 years later after that, when the movie comes out, and I was very struck to see, because I had to send him the script, of course, for approval. I was struck by the movie that there was only one scene in the entire film that was not also in my stage adaptation. I was curious about how helpful my adaptation may have been to him. I never got the answer to that question. I've done a lot of those kinds of things in my life. Even if I wanted to take him to court, it belongs to him. What am I going to do with that kind of a lawsuit? I didn't care about that. It was striking to me that he only had one scene that wasn't in my adaptation. What I did with this is I used Lincoln stuff, I used Shakespeare stuff, munged them together, and then I wrote linkages that were my writing amidst all of that. I augmented things that I had found throughout. In all the year-long research of reading that I did, I wondered what I should call it. Should I call it a compiled script, an adaptation? I reached out to the Writers Union, the union in the U.S. that all screenwriters and playwrights and everything belong to. I asked them, what is this? They said, that is your original writing product because it doesn't exist in any other form. It's got source material all over the place. It is not a published play right now. If it ever does become a published play, I bibliographize all my source material. That's why we listed in the PR as written by Kevin Purcell.
And not in iambic pentameter.
A bunch of it is, without giving away too many secrets, I was really struck by how much of Lincoln's speech creation is in iambic pentameter. I was really struck by that. It got me interested in this project right from the beginning, because I looked at lines like, now we are engaged in a great civil war, which is not perfect iambic pentameter, but there are lines in the Gettysburg Address that are perfect iambic pentameter. I did kind of a point counterpoint with other lines in verse iambic pentameter from Shakespeare. That will show up in the course of the play, done as transitions, done as whole thematic observations, done as summaries at the end of the play, because it couldn't possibly be an accident that Lincoln thought in iambic pentameter at times. That was just too fascinating.
At the very least, he had a definite rhythm to his speeches that probably was influenced by all the Shakespeare he had read over the years and seen. This is Community Voices. We're talking with Kevin Purcell. He has written and is directing Lincoln and Shakespeare, which will be performed at the Hoagland Center for the Arts Peggy Ryder Theater. That's the one up on the third floor, Saturday, February 21st at 7 p.m., with another performance the next day, Sunday, the 22nd. At 3 p.m. It sounds great. I love Wild Columbine. They're going to provide some period sounds as part of it. Anything you want to leave us with, Kevin?
If you have ever been like me, where 15 years ago, I wondered, how could somebody like Lincoln at that time, with just the complete works of Shakespeare available to him, well, of course, and the Bible, which he also had, on his own, read, because he read the plays years before he ever saw a production. I haven't very often read a play that I haven't seen first, because I think it's difficult stuff to read cold, not for Lincoln. If people are interested in Lincoln or Shakespeare or the combination of the two, this is the play for them. Anybody that feels a little bit scared about approaching Shakespeare, particularly done out of context, because we don't do the entire play of any of the Shakespeare stuff that we use, let that go. Let it wash over you. Let it come at you and take what makes sense to you and resonates for you. And then use it to see if you can get illuminated about how you see Lincoln and about how this may have helped him make decisions and write words and think of the incredible speeches that he gave that have really changed not just the country, but the world. That has been fascinating for us that have worked on it.
Look forward to seeing it at the Hoagland, February 21st and 22nd. More information at the Hoagland Center for the Arts.org website, or you can find more with this post at nprillinois.org. Kevin Purcell, thanks for joining us on Community Voices.
My pleasure, Randy.